Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Tuesday morning. It's July 14th. We've got 70 degrees both here in Park City and in the Heber Valley. A little bit of smoke in the Heber Valley, a bit of hazy skies here in the Park City area. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, it's meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Tuesday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for the Wasatch back on this Tuesday. We are looking at a mixture of clouds and sunshine as we go throughout the day. It's still going to be hot out there, just not as hot as what we were dealing with the past couple of days. We will also add in those smoky skies as we go throughout the day, particularly in the Heber Valley. And yes, we're going to add in that slight chance at least of a couple of afternoon pop-up showers and storms as some of that monsoon moisture begins to shift to the north. So kind of an unsettled afternoon. But just be aware there's a chance of a few pop-up showers and storms. There's also going to be some of that smoke and haze in the sky. But yes, at times, a little sunshine. Temperatures will warm into the low 90s in Park City. We'll see those highs climbing into the upper 90s in the Heber Valley. Now, as we go into your Wednesday, I think we're going to see a little better chance of some pop-up scattered showers and thunderstorms across the area during the afternoon hours, and that should help to give us slightly cooler air across the region. So we should be talking about high temperatures only in the upper 80s in Park City, with highs only in the low to mid 90s in the Heber Valley. But again, I'd keep the rain gear closer by, especially for your Wednesday, and that will continue into your Thursday and Friday as well. I think that's the main time frame to see some of those pop-up showers and storms each afternoon. High temperatures once again basically remain into the upper 80s in Park City as we go into your Wednesday and Thursday. We'll see those highs in the low 90s in the Heber Valley. By the time we get towards Friday and the weekend, we'll keep that chance of a few pop-up showers and storms in the forecast as we go throughout the afternoon hours. Again, it's not going to rain all day every day, but we will see chances of those pop-up showers and storms each and every afternoon in particular, and that'll help kind of hold temperatures down. So slowly looking at temperatures cooling from the upper 80s in Park City for your Wednesday and Thursday to the mid-80s by the time we get towards the upcoming weekend. Meanwhile, in the Heber Valley, we'll cool those temperatures from the low 90s as we get towards your Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday to just right around 90 as we head into the weekend. That's the latest on your forecast for the Wasatch Back on ABC4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
This weather report is brought to you in part by ABC4 Utah, abc4.com, and Deer Valley Resorts, deervalley.com.
It's 8:08 on this Tuesday morning, July 14th. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, stay tuned. Coming up, we'll be checking in with Summit County Manager Shane Scott, taking a look at the agenda for tomorrow's county council meeting, including a review of Basin Recreation's request to put a $150 million recreation bond on November's ballot. From Ballet West, principal faculty member Allison Bono with details about the inaugural Summit Festival happening this week. And from the Christian Center of Park City, Executive Director Steve Richardson introduced the new Counseling Center Director, Scott McConnell. First, in some local news, the Buck Basin Fire is burning in Wasatch County, several miles southeast of Timber Lakes. It's burned 170 acres so far. Crews are battling the fire on the ground and from the air. Lightning sparked the fire Saturday night. It is 0% contained. It's burning in timber in the Uinta Wasatch Cache National Forest, some 4 to 5 miles northwest of Current Creek Reservoir. County emergency responders estimated it is about 3 miles from Timber Lakes. No structures are threatened. Utah Fire Info reports fire engines, helicopters, an air tanker, and hand crews are all responding. Wasatch County Emergency Manager Jeremy Hales told KPCW Monday that a larger incident management team would take command of the firefighting efforts by last night. The new fire comes as Utah contends with record-breaking heat. Smoke may be visible, and some in Wasatch County residents are asked not to report that smoke. And residents in Summit County's Weber Canyon are working together this fire season to stay safe and informed. KPCW's Connor Thomas spoke with residents about their new emergency radio system.
Every first Tuesday of the month, the airwaves in southern Summit County come alive. It's roll call for amateur radio enthusiasts. Residents in Weber Canyon above Oakley are joining their ranks, but less as a hobby and more for safety. In May, volunteers erected a two-way radio tower so residents have a reliable way to communicate during fire season. Dane Roth had the idea after watching a documentary about the 2018 Camp Fire, California's deadliest ever, a couple months prior. The blaze destroyed cell phone infrastructure, and Roth realized what a disaster that would be for Weber Canyon. He lives there year-round, and the canyon doesn't have strong cell service anyway.
When you make that kind of an investment in this kind of lifestyle, you snowmobile in 2 miles off the road to get in and out every day. There's no snowplow or anything. You want to know where your water's coming from. You want to know what the situation of really living here full-time is going to entail. And part of that for me was communications.
As luck would have it, his neighbor, Alicia O'Meara, had a half-century-old television tower sitting in her backyard. Her cabin's previous owners, the Skaggs family, had it installed.
And when this came up, we're like, that is a perfect reason why we have this tower, and I can't think of a better reason to donate and have access for all the community here.
Roth sits on the board of the Cool Springs Mutual Water Company, which owns land on Weber Canyon's northern ridgeline, about 9 miles from Oakley. But before they could set up a tower there, Roth also needed a license from the Federal Communications Commission. He joined a Facebook group and soon found himself enmeshed in Utah's amateur radio network.
I went from pocket protector, avoider, nerd, not doing that, to full-fledged license in a month. And then from there, I was like, okay, now what are we going to do from a hardware perspective? And 2 months later, we had a repeater working.
The very same Facebook friends who showed Roth the ham radio ropes helped hoist the tower atop Cool Springs' old water tank site. Now, he says, they're friends for life. The tower doesn't broadcast like an FM or AM radio station. As a repeater, it allows individuals with two-way radios to talk amongst each other at greater distance. O'Meara's husband, Carl Lund, says they've shared their tower information with local authorities like the Summit County Sheriff's Office.
So we can hear and talk to people that are anywhere in our canyon, including up at Smith and Morehouse or way at the end of the canyon at Gardner Fork. Which is some ways from here. We can also talk to people in Park City and in Camas and in Summit Park, Ogden, Morgan. We essentially any emergency is happening anywhere near here, we can access information if anyone's transmitting that information.
And in a dry year like this one, that could be life-saving. Roth estimates there are about 30 people who regularly participate in monthly roll calls, although it's hard for him to know exactly how many. Anyone looking to connect to the network also needs an FCC license. More information is at kpcw.org. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
The Summit County Council meets in work session tomorrow starting at 4:15 at the Summit County Courthouse in Colville. In the studio with a preview of the meeting, I have County Manager Shane Scott. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So, let's talk a little bit about this. Why are we meeting in Colville? Because I had thought we talked a little bit about how you try to meet where the business is happening, and that would be Basin Recreation with, again, that bond. And
That's true. We also have a public hearing about an east side issue. So this is really the challenge we always have, which was the challenge last week. We had some interviews for the Hoytsville Cemetery, which obviously is in the eastern side, and we also had that public hearing on Basin Code. So we are kind of maybe looking for a little bit more clarification, and we're trying to just have everything that would be on the east side in one meeting and the Basin side in another, and that's proves challenging. This public hearing we had scheduled for weeks ago. When we have public hearings, we have notices that go out and we publish things on the website. And in this case, this lot line adjustment is one that we really need to get done. We did the same issue on the Basin side maybe 4 weeks ago. We've had our time getting a quorum and at the East Side Planning Commission. So once we did, we needed to get this one done because we have people that are waiting to adjust some lot lines. We have a line of that waiting. So it's a challenge we always have. Our next meeting that is in the Basin, I think, is the very first meeting in August, which would be when we address the issue that was tabled last week.
Okay. I also wanted to ask about Summit County's commitment to the Park City Senior Center, our financial commitment, that is, because we've heard that the county will be contributing, but we haven't heard how much.
Well, we've committed to going, having that discussion again during our budget process for fiscal year 27. I do know that some members of my council and some members of the Park City Council have met just informally and have had discussions about what that looks like. There was an initial request, maybe even last year, for some just capital funds. I've heard that that maybe has changed to something more along the lines of ongoing operations, FF&E, which is your furniture and some of your furnishings in the building. So I think we're still in negotiations and discussing. I think we'll, you know, we have an organizational requirement to provide senior services, so we're going to do that, and that'll be something we need to do on an ongoing basis, and we'll take that very seriously. As you probably know as well, we are going through a senior services plan, which looks at senior services throughout the county, and we're trying to get just a master plan and what that looks like going forward, how much growth we're having in senior services, how much need there is for rides and meals, and we're trying to would love to have the council have a plan that they can look to when they make these budget decisions every year.
Yeah. Now, are we seeing similar growth challenges in both the South and North Summit senior centers?
I would say no. I think there are some growth challenges that are maybe different, and I'm thinking more specifically about rides for doctor's appointments. Some of those issues have come up more and more on the east side. But as far as the how often individuals meet as in a senior group, meals that need to be provided, most of our East Siders have said that they are content for now. In fact, I heard one even say they lament when it grows. They don't want more people. They don't want it to be more crowded. So we obviously don't do anything to curb that, but we want to address any of those needs appropriately throughout the county.
Okay. Well, back to the meeting agenda. Basin Rec will be asking the Summit County Council to put a bond question on November's ballot at tomorrow's meeting. So would $150 million for the two new field houses being suggested be the biggest bond that our county has ever seen?
It's three times the open space bond. It's the biggest bond I've heard of, and of course I've only been here 3.5 years, but it's a big one. And if you look through their staff report, they've got a lot of they're really trying to respond to the community, and I think they've taken a good approach with that. They feel like they're responding to community feedback. As you have probably heard before from Rob and others with Basin Rec, the field house is at or near capacity. They had a stat in there that said some 60-70% of people choose not to go there because of how crowded it is, and I'm one of those. I live very close to there. It takes me 5 minutes to get there, and I don't go just because it's so busy. So I think they're really trying to respond to community feedback, coupling that with the project, like the Klein Dollar project, which has envisioned a Basin Rec facility as part of the housing that would go there. So I'm really anxious to hear from Rob and his team. I think they've done a great job. $150 million sounds like a lot. If you looked at the impact to a home, for a $1 million home, I believe it was about $203 a year that bond would cost for every $1 million of assessed value. So that's not no small amount, but they have really some major indoor facilities at both these locations that they're planning to do.
Yeah, and again, I mean, it's just such a small area when we think about, I mean, it's certainly open to Park City residents. I mean, it's open to really anybody. I mean, if you're outside of the Park City or Centerville Basin Rec, you would do pay a little bit more, but will we see some adjustments there?
I'm not sure. I didn't see that in the report, and that's a great question for Rob and his team. We serve over 24,000 individuals in the Snyderville Basin that are, you know, permanent residents. That doesn't even count the, you know, 60% or more that are second homeowners that I'm sure recreate not only on our trails, but in maybe the field house when they are here as well. They have done a great job of really taking into account not only the existing residents, but those that are in the pipeline, those that are the entitlements that are coming for the council. So they've got the growth projections as well for how this is going to impact our current facilities, and it just feels like it's something needs to be done.
Yeah, these facilities are still subject to planning approval, so we don't know. Will we know what we're voting on?
I think so. Obviously, they have done some of their due diligence when it comes to these two sites. One is over in the Silver Creek Village. I think that one would be mostly aquatics, and the other one would be part of the Klein Dolly over by the Jeremy Ranch Elementary School that would be more of a climbing and fitness center. And both of those have been discussed, intensively with not only the county, with the community, but also with the county staff. So we are aware of what can and can't be done on those properties and what would need to change, whether that's a conditional use permit or a low impact permit or whatever would need to happen. Those discussions have taken place.
Okay. Let's see, we know that these bonds would be like a general obligation bond, right? That it would come directly onto the property tax.
Right.
What about some sales tax opportunities? Is there any money out there for Basin Rec?
I don't think so. I mean, they are a special service district, so they are funded almost exclusively from property taxes. They do have fees that help, but they actually have an impact fee study being conducted right now as well, and that will help pay for some of their facilities. But they've really outlined that very well in the report, what they plan to spend this money on, these bond funds on two different locations, and both of those are, they considered those phase ones, so they could, there would be some growth opportunities down the road in those two facilities as well, but mostly those are property tax initiatives that would be funded by property taxes or those impact fees.
Yeah, maybe you could talk just a little bit about then why government leaders would choose a general obligation bond over a sales tax bond. Maybe what one is best for over the other?
Well, I'd say for Basin Rec, it's twofold. One, they aren't much of a sales tax funded organization, just from sheer opportunities. But the second one is, I think a GO bond has a lot of really good opportunities. There's two things I think about when I think about a general obligation bond, and one is that the people vote on it. That's really exciting. Anything we can do, we can have the majority of individuals in favor of it. We want to do that. That's almost always the best way to go, and when you do have a GO bond, you usually get the best rate as well. It's backed by property taxes, but it's more secure, and so that is the way we get the lowest interest rate. So between those two things, I think this is a really good opportunity. Recreation is obviously very important in our community, but it is one of those non-essential services. I think people, when they think about essential services, they think about law enforcement, they think about public health. This is one of those that is kind of a nice to haves, but I think our community demands that we have world-class recreation, and this is one that I think if you see people voting for it, this is something we would prioritize and want to do.
Okay, and then bonds, of course, are spread out over about 20 years. That means that anybody new coming in will then help to pay for the facilities.
Absolutely.
It's not just a burden for those of us living here now.
That's a great point. And then again, those second homeowners pay 100% of their assessed value, so they will be paying more than the numbers I just quoted. Those are for residents only.
All right, let's turn to the 910 Morgan County issue. Summit County working on an interlocal agreement with Morgan County for the 910 Ranch. What will that agreement cover, and I guess when will the council vote on it?
It was on the agenda for tomorrow. It has been postponed. It was a short item. I think the legal team has gone back and forth on an agreement, and it was basically that we would pay the payment in lieu of taxes. There was something that addressed the roads that would be coming from the Morgan County side. And I think Morgan County just wanted to make sure that the Summit County owned property that's on the Morgan County side would stay open space, was not intended to have buildings on it or any kind of development. And I think that ILA really sets all of that it establishes all of that between the two organizations. When they addressed it, I think it was last week, it was actually on the Tuesday that we went over there for the boundary line adjustment, they had addressed it before we arrived, and they had some questions. I think they had some questions around how adopting this ILA, how does that interact with the state code or the legislation that was passed about county-owned land and other properties. So my understanding of the legislation was, this legislation is in place unless there's an ILA that you sign between the two organizations. So this ILA would, I think, supersede the legislation that was passed. Again, I think most of the ILA and the legislation mirror each other. So I'm not too concerned, but we haven't seen the red lines coming back from Morgan County on what they wanted to address.
So I guess it's like, Do we know when this is going to get approved?
I think it'll be soon. I think it'll be. I don't think it'll be possibly on the 29th of this month.
All right. So it seems like the Morgan County Commission feels a bit blindsided during this purchase process. I guess when did the county begin negotiating the agreement?
Well, I think that's really a real challenge with negotiating property is we don't do that in open sessions. We don't do that because we don't want to disclose the buyers or the sellers, and also just the amounts we are trying to pay. So when we did bring this forward, they found out when everybody else found out. I think one of the challenges we have is they seem to want to be a little bit more than just notified. They want to be advised. They want to advise us on how we operate here. And of course, we have certain requirements with the grants we've received. We have open space bond fund requirements, and we really want to be a partner with Morgan County, but we do want to make the decisions about this property. If we didn't have to purchase property in Morgan County, I don't think we would have. But the seller in this case did not want to sell just the part that was in Summit County. He wanted to sell all of his ranch, and therefore we bought a property in Morgan County as well.
Yeah, and going back to some of the Morgan County Commission meeting audios of the meetings, they apparently have been talking amongst themselves about this 37-acre acquisition that Summit County made last fall before the full 910 ranch purchase. Can you explain what and where that was?
Well, I think since the 910 option was signed, we have purchased a couple of pieces of property in Morgan County that were mostly donut holes. They were right in the middle of the ranch that weren't owned by the 910 seller. So we purchased those. I think the first time we did that, I think this has been a concern. I'll just speak for myself. I just really didn't understand that they were really concerned with us buying property in their county. That's not been something I've ever felt where I didn't really care who bought property in my county, especially if they're preserving it for open space. If they wanted to do that, I'd love somebody to come in and buy every single piece of property in our county. I don't care who it is. So I've really been I've been confused by the concern. Of course, if they think we're going to buy something and then jam down a hotel on the top of the 910 ranch, that would be a concern. But we're clearly not doing that. So I've been confused by that. So when we first purchased the 37 acres, for example, we didn't, again, go to them and ask them permission. We just did it. We thought we were doing a good thing. The second time we acquired property in the 910 in this kind of a situation, we met with them, we talked to them, we showed them what it was, why it was important that we buy it. And so we really went through a process of notifying them about that.
So I guess usually we would hear about this acquisitions, and I guess where did the money come from? Because we never really did hear about the purchase of that 37 acres publicly.
I actually don't remember what we did publicly. This has been, two or maybe almost 3 years in the making that we've purchased these two their in holdings. I think we made them public that we bought them, but I'd have to remind myself of the details and talk to Jess about that. But I think we did. They're just really kind of inconsequential and very small. We purchased them for with open space bond funds, and they were, again, 37 acres times the amount we paid for the 910 is not very much money.
Okay, so off the top of your head, you don't know what the purchase price was.
I don't remember, no.
And again, was the property owner different from the original?
Yes, yes. That's correct.
All right. Yeah. And well, the part of the 910 ranch in Morgan County, about 1,800 acres, does that remain as open space greenbelt?
Yes, yep, that's correct. And that's why they asked us to pay that payment in lieu of taxes, because it will go from a private owner to a public owner, and they would like those funds.
Okay. And then finally, the county had also canceled, as you mentioned, the public hearing on a new rezoning process for the Snyderville Basin last week. You said that it'll come back later this month?
I think it's August 4th. I think that's on the agenda, and of course it will be in the basin.
Okay. And can you get a little bit more specific if this replaces the old way of rezoning, or does it simply add another way to rezone?
I think it adds another way. It is a precursor to a new zone that we're trying to work on with that is in reference to the Klein Dolly, but would be available to anyone to a petition to rezone. So it is coming before them ahead of that, and it is really just laying out a process.
Okay. Shane, anything else you want to mention?
I don't think so. We have the Summit County Fair coming up in a couple weeks, so the 1st of August, but hope everybody is having a wonderful summer.
Okay. Thanks so much for your time. That's Summit County Manager Shane Scott. Ballet Ballet West presents its inaugural Ballet West Summit Festival, where art meets elevation this week. On the phone with a preview of the event, I have Ballet West principal faculty member Allison DeBona. Thanks for joining us, Allison. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so as I mentioned, this is the inaugural Summit Festival. What's the vision behind creating this?
Ballet West has been working towards performing more often in Park City for the last 5 years. And when we conceived what the concept would be, we just felt we had a great opportunity to be multidisciplinary, work with incredible partners within the community, and truly it just came together so fast because it just felt right.
Yeah, so do we have a lot of ballet supporters here in the area?
Yes, we do. Our school actually has almost 300 students. I think the community in terms of a relationship with Ballet West has grown incredibly over the last 5 years in particular. And so it's just, like I said, the idea started rolling and everybody came on board very quickly because it felt like a really inspiring event. And so here we are the week of the 3-day festival.
Okay. The title, as I mentioned, includes Where Art Meets Elevation. I guess, what does that mean to you as an artist?
So the three events that we have program one, From Root to Releve, with Ballerina Farm. And the way we looked at that collaboration is, when you're looking at culinary excellence, when you're looking at farming, when you're looking at dance, there's a synergy there. It's artistic, it's scientific. We approach our crafts all the same way. And so having a farm to table dinner out on campus, we're building a stage on the Ballerina Farm property. And we're going to have live performance during the dinner. It to me, that means where art meets elevation. Program two, Raising Voices on Point with Park City Film. We have a guest choreographer, Phil Chan, and he is a co-creator of something called Final Bow for Yellow Face. And it's global work to bring awareness to Asian stereotypes in ballet and opera. So we're going to screen two of his films two of his films with Park City Film, 10 times better and about face. And so we're going to be able to see his work not only on stage on Friday, but also his life's work. And so we're really incredibly excited about that. And then program three, Ballet West at the Summit, we're partnering with Canyons Village, and we're going to be presenting dance up at the amphitheater for the first time.
Nice. Okay, so let's go back to the first one. As you mentioned, the From Root to Releve, this is happening tomorrow. It's basically a farm to table. I'm guessing the connection with Ballerina Farms is the fact that the proprietor there was a dancer herself.
She was a dancer. Her children are dancers. Her and I connected on a more personal level. We love ballet. We're business owners. It just all came together really quickly. We just started dreaming. And so here we are. It's actually a sold out event and there's quite a long wait list. So we're not going to be able to welcome anyone new to that event, but we're hoping for it to be annual, like we mentioned. And so maybe people will be able to get tickets quickly next year. But like I said, the two of our visions for that particular event was just to bring everything in her life together into one place, and you know, it was very good synergy with the brands.
Great. And then on Thursday, as you mentioned, a free public screening of About Face, Disrupting Ballet, and 10 Times Better. This is happening at the Jim Santee Auditorium. What's the time there? 7 o'clock.
All three events actually start at 7 o'clock, and that is a free event at the Jim Santee. And we just welcome anyone to come who might like film but also interested in the work of Phil Chan and his business partner Georgina, because they're quite literally changing the scope and the breadth of ballet through their work, Final Bow for Yellow Face. We're really, really proud to be presenting this work.
Okay, and there's going to be a Q&A following that with the director, the producer, and then Adam Skloot from Ballet West.
Yes, so Phil Chan, Jennifer Lin, who's the director, and Corey Lynn Stieg, who's the producer, will all be there with Adam, and Katie Wang will moderate the evening. And so all of them are, you know, very involved. They're going to be able to speak directly to the project.
Okay. Are tickets needed then for the screening?
You just have to RSVP online. So if anyone, it's really simple. If you go to balletwest.org, you will be able to see all three events listed with complete information. And it's very simple to either RSVP to the filming event on Thursday and to the Canyons Village performance on Friday.
Okay. And then what's happening Friday? You'd mentioned that's going to be at the Canyons Village Amphitheater.
Yes, it's the first time they're going to be able to present ballet and dance up on stage at the amphitheater at Canyons Village. That's also at 7 o'clock. And we will be presenting three company works. We're bringing four principal dancers, Catlin Addison, Jenna Herrera, Adrian Fry, and David Huffmeyer. And we are also presenting four world premieres with Ballet West Academy students. So the highest level of our academy, the dancers who are up and coming, next in line to enter the company, have been created on in Park City the last 2 weeks. We've had a residency up at the campus that we have in Park City. And so these works have been made in just 9 days. It's an incredible opportunity for the dancers to feel what it's like to be in a company, because that program is designed just for that, to give these dancers a company experience before heading into a job. And they're simply incredible. So what I love to see about that is that we have our principal dancers, the highlight of Ballet West, on the same program as the next generation. And you just see the impact that Ballet West Academy has on dance. We're the 9th largest academy in the country. And so, you know, on top of the almost, we have 900 students across Utah.
Wow. Tell me about what you have to do to prepare the amphitheater for dancers.
Yeah, it's really exciting. So actually, that amphitheater is situated very well for dance. It's a large stage, so that part of it wasn't very difficult. But we will bring in a sprung floor, so we make sure we take care of our dancers. And so we bring in a subfloor where it's sprung, their bodies are safe. So we will load in on Friday all day for that. And then, like I said, Canyons Village has been a wonderful, wonderful partner. And so we'll have the dressing rooms in one of the hotels. We'll take care of them, and then we walk over, and it's just a backstage venue. You'll be able to see the dancers when you're up on the hill, you know, warming up backstage. It's just a different and really unique view of the process. And so it came together very easy. It has not felt in any way like it is a stretch for us.
Okay, I'm guessing the hope that this becomes an annual tradition here.
We are planning that. It's not a hope. We're dedicated to it. We hope to expand on it. We hope to build relationships with more local business. So I'm sure everyone out there knows Vanessa De Palma Wright. She owns Farasha. She also owns District F. We're collaborating with them. They're going to be dressing our principal dancers for Ballerina Farm. We did a photo shoot up at District F for our playbill with all of our choreographers. When we say we're really trying to bring the community together through our art form, we are, but we're elevating the other art forms. We're showing how ballet can be a true collaborator. I know sometimes people just think about what we do, you know, in a traditional, you know, stage setting when you go to a theater, but really the breadth and the scope of what's possible is very grand. And so I think that everything we're doing is we're showing off not just our art, but everyone else's as well, because I really truly feel like everything that we're doing does have that synergy.
Okay. Allison, anything else you wanted to mention?
No, we would welcome families on Friday. I know probably some people have that worry. It's a ballet performance. Maybe my children aren't welcome. That is not the case. We want kids to be introduced to dance. And so just remember that if you come to Canyons Village, to bring your low chairs or blankets and be prepared for that. You're welcome to bring food and drink. It is a no alcohol event, just giving the heads up there. But we really do welcome young people to come to the performance and be introduced to our art form.
Okay. Allison DeBona with Ballet West. Thanks so much for your time.
I always appreciate you. Thank you.
Again, you can get more information by going online to balletwest.org. In the studio with me from the Christian Center of Park City, I have Executive Director Steve Richardson, along with a new director of the Counseling Center, Scott McConnell. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Steve, this has taken a while to find Scott. Maybe you can tell us what you were looking for when you were trying to fill the job.
So we were looking for a lot of things. We needed somebody who was young, energetic, really excited about counseling, who had an expertise in trauma, an expertise in children, an expertise in caring for people of all different socioeconomic backgrounds. And it was tough to find somebody who was able to come up here, who was really willing to serve the mission, who saw it as something to provide care as opposed to just running a counseling center. And so I was really, really picky. And luckily, we were able to be really, really picky. We had some great counselors. We have some great counselors that were able to stand in the gap and make this happen and give us time to find just the right person. And I am convinced we found just the right person.
Okay, Scott, well, tell us a little bit about your background and I guess what drew you to the Christian Center.
Yeah, absolutely. I have a background. I really started off as a therapist working in the field of trauma, particularly with kids, working with kids who'd been through, who were either in the foster care system or had been adopted. Oftentimes with therapists, your new therapists, you're put into really tough situations just right off the start. And so it's really a master class in learning how to work with kids who have experienced neglect, abuse, exposure to drug addiction, really tough situations. And also then working with the foster families, so really difficult parenting situations. How do we help kids who have this history of trauma? As well as just working in general outpatient in that setting as well. And so really the start of my career was getting that high exposure to trauma and really intense situations, which has really shaped me as a therapist to be very trauma-minded as well as attachment-focused. As well, I've found that having a trauma and attachment focus, almost with so many clients, a lot of times it comes back to those two things.
So are you from Utah?
I'm not from Utah originally. I like to say I'm from the Mountain West. I started off in Alaska, then Montana, Wyoming, Colorado. Now Utah's home.
Okay, so you didn't move here for the job, but you've been here for a bit?
Yeah, so my wife and I, we moved here from the Denver area in 2017, and Utah Valley is home.
Okay, so will you be providing therapy, or will you just be managing the team at the center?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll be doing a little bit of both. I'll be both working as a clinician, seeing clients, and managing the counseling department.
Okay, well, as we know, mental health needs have grown significantly over the past several years. Any trends that you know of here in Summit County?
Absolutely. So I'm still learning what's going on here, getting exposure to the needs in this area. But from what I'm seeing already, there's a high need for people who just need basic needs assistance. Working with people who are need assistance with substance, drug abuse, and trauma. It's really tricky when you're both struggling with housing, food, and you also have a trauma history of how do you get into the mental health things when there are these basic needs going on. And that's what I love about CCPC. We have that basic needs assistance to help with that area so that us therapists can be really empowered with helping with those other things.
Yeah, I'm guessing, Steve, that the fact that you don't know how you're going to come up with rent money or put food on the table creates a lot of anxiety.
Exactly. If you think of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you got to have basic shelter. You got to have basic food before you can talk about a relationship or dealing with your childhood issues or dealing with your neighbor that's driving you nuts. If you don't have a neighbor, you're not going to really struggle with that. So the first thing we have to do is ensure people have food. We have to ensure people have housing. We have to ensure people have warm clothes and can pay their bills. And we do all of those things. But we also know that we're trying to do that in a full spectrum of care. So bringing in Scott that has that concern for the whole spectrum of care, that every time we meet with a client, we want them to know we're here for every part of their needs, along with working with all the other nonprofits in town to make it possible for people to live a better life here.
All right. So, Scott, what kind of counseling services does the Christian Center provide?
Absolutely. So we work in an outpatient setting. Really, we see clients coming with a variety of issues, anything from more anxiety to depression to more intense things like trauma or complex trauma, substance abuse. Really, there's a wide range there.
Yeah, but I'm just thinking of some of the acronyms that aren't coming, EDMR. So, I mean, just there's very specific types of counseling.
Absolutely. I'm trained in EMDR, which is a treatment for trauma, and we also have several therapists who are trained in ART therapy, accelerated resolution therapy, which is a kind of a faster version of EMDR for addressing trauma as well.
And then we have neurofeedback, and we have children's therapy, and we have parent therapy, and we have relationship therapy. And what you're saying, you're right, we have so much and so much expertise. We don't have any cookie cutter counselors. Every counselor has a little bit different. So that's why it's important to look at the website and say, okay, what is my real need? Who's going to connect with me? And then Scott has an expertise in just about all of it to make sure that we're offering the best possible care to the people here in Summit County.
Okay. Are you looking to make any changes within the counseling center?
Really, we're just looking to grow. We want to continue to help as many people as possible who need that care. And so right now we're trying to find qualified therapists, more qualified therapists, to just continue to expand our hours and continue seeing more clients.
Okay. And who can access the counseling services? I mean, are they available regardless of income or insurance status?
Yeah, good question. So we have financial aid that we can offer for people who are low income, where sometimes they can get, or where they can get a scholarship for paying nothing or as much as they can afford. And then we also have private insurance too that we can accept, as well as just if someone wants to pay out of pocket.
Okay. One barrier to seeking counsel can be just stigma. I mean, what would you say to that person that may be hesitant to reach out for help?
And I think the good news is a lot of that stigma is really starting to go away. And when I think about those people who do experience the stigma, is really realizing that it's not just changing your life when you seek help. You're really having a generational impact when you get help. It's not only going to affect you, it'll affect your kids, their kids, people you may not even meet. It's really, when you think about it, it's pretty miraculous, the power that can come just from one person seeking help. So you really have everything to gain and not much to lose in that situation.
Yeah, now your therapist able to prescribe medication?
So we do have a nurse who is able to do that. So we do have someone in-house, which is a really great service that we have.
Okay, and any particular population, whether it be teens, families, older adults that are experiencing unique challenges at this point?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think the really cool thing is that a lot of, you mentioned stigma earlier, a lot of that stigma is really going away with younger generations. And so we really are seeing more teens and younger adults seeking out therapy. It's becoming a lot more normalized for that. And what that's allowing is for these issues to come up that perhaps have not been treated before, things like OCD, things like ADHD, is that so much more normalized that people are being able to get help for that, and we're being able to see that more often. And really, I'd say trauma's always been there. It's just our understanding of trauma is growing within the mental health field, and we're seeing much higher prevalence of trauma than perhaps was originally realized when it was first being researched or studied.
All right, how many therapists do you have on staff now, and how many would you like to grow that to?
Yeah, right now we have 7 therapists on our staff. I'm not sure if there's an exact number that we're wanting to grow to, but really we're just wanting to maximize our office space, our building space that we do have, so that we can offer evening hours or perhaps even weekends. We're just wanting to make sure that we're utilizing the space as much as possible so that the most amount of people can get help.
Okay, and are the fees for therapy, are they market rate?
Absolutely, yep. I mean, we're probably a little bit below. When we look up what other therapists are offering in Park City, we're about right in the middle. We're not at the ceiling, but we're also not at the low amount. We're wanting to offer a premium service with our therapy, but at a rate that's reasonable.
I would say for the level of training that our counselors have, we are the bottom. We are about as cheap as you can get for private pay, but also realize the insurance, we take almost all insurances. And then the cool thing is that, as you were mentioning, that financial aid. When I started a year and a half ago, 7% of our clients were on financial aid. Right now it's 40%. That's a huge difference. Partly that is people getting rid of that stigma. Partly is us making it much more transparent to say it's here. And partly it's this community saying we want to support financial aid. We want to support counseling. We want to be able to give to the Christian Center so they can provide these kind of services. And it's so cool to see two bilingual therapists, but the other five are doing so much work with financial aid as well. And it's really amazing to see that care for every single person, regardless of their background.
Okay, so in addition to that need for financial aid, what are some of the other biggest needs that you're seeing in the community this summer?
So the biggest needs in the community this summer, of course, that sense of loneliness and disconnection. Mm-hmm. That people do a lot of solitary activities over the summer, and it's easy to do to go out a hike by yourself, to go to bike ride by yourself. We love these things in Park City, and yet there's so much of that sense of loneliness and feeling like I don't really know if I matter, I don't really know why I'm here, I don't really know if I'm doing something great, and people start to over question themselves, and they start to get that anxiety, that sense of depression. The same trends that we see throughout, as I talk to the other executive directors and other counselors in the town, and help people to realize you don't have to feel completely broken to get help. Sometimes it's just a little tune-up. Sometimes to come in and talk to somebody because you're not feeling quite right. And it's not saying that there's something really wrong with me. I just don't feel 100% myself. Come in for a tune-up. Come in to talk to somebody. It can be amazing how much you can grow just in a few sessions with talking to somebody who really cares.
Okay. Real quick on the food pantry. I mean, that continues to serve hundreds of local families. What are the current demand levels there?
Oh, there are thousands. As a matter of fact, last year we had 60,000 visits, 60,000 throughout Wasatch and Summit County. And so it's such a high demand. The food insecurity issues as a whole, we've started Pantry at Your Door, so there are some people that don't feel comfortable coming to the mobile food pantry or to the stationary pantries, and so for 100 families, we actually take them food to their houses to make sure that there isn't a single barrier to stop people from getting healthy food and to help stop people from getting care.
Yeah. Any particular items that the food pantry could use?
It's always fresh fruits, vegetables, milks, eggs, cheeses. If you're able to call ahead of time or stop by and talk to the great and amazing Jaime. He can get you set up. And then, of course, the goal is if we can have donations, the kind that crinkles the money, then we can go out and buy the things that we're missing that day. Since we do food rescue, every day is a little bit different.
Okay. And then volunteers, I know, a big part of the Christian Center.
Oh, such a huge thing.
What's your biggest volunteer need right now?
It's still food pantry. We have a lot of people that are excited about doing the mobile food pantries and volunteering for that, but just coming back and helping us to pack for the mobile food pantries to take that food out to the different low-income housing areas around Park City, all 10 of them, but also to help just organize, to care for clients, to make people feel like they are so special and so valuable and so important that they're really having a shopping experience even when they're down and struggling in life, to have that sense of respect and dignity. That's what volunteers give, and we are so thankful for it.
Okay. How does somebody get involved then as a volunteer?
So go check out CC of PC. Christian Center of Park City, so the website, and you can write on there, sign up to be a volunteer, find out about the opportunities, connect with our team, email me or Jaime, and we'll get you set up.
Okay, Steve, Scott, anything else you wanted to mention?
Just thank you, Leslie, for the opportunity, but also thank you to this community. It is so amazing to see how many people are touched and cared for by people who really care. This is a great place to live. It's a great place to serve, and we are thankful to be here.
Okay, Steve Richardson, Scott McCall, thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks.
Well, in this month's book review, We the Women, The Hidden Heroes Who Shaped America, journalists Nora O'Donnell and Kate Anderson Brower present a powerful and inspiring account of the women whose contributions to American history over the past 250 years have been overlooked. Here's Sue Niblock with this month's review.
I chose this book for this month's review as it seemed like the perfect choice as our nation celebrates its 250th anniversary. Organized into five sections, each covering a 50-year period, the book unfolds through chapters that read like short stories. The authors cover more than 35 women from diverse backgrounds and periods who played pivotal roles in shaping the United States, even though many of their accomplishments were ignored or forgotten in traditional history books. With a few exceptions, such as Eleanor Roosevelt, most of the women highlighted in We the Women are figures many of us may know little about. Among them are Mary Catherine Goddard, who printed the first official copy of the Declaration of Independence, and who is the only woman whose name appeared on it, Phyllis Wheatley, the first African-American woman to publish a book of poetry and who became an internationally recognized writer despite being enslaved. Mary Edwards Walker, a Civil War surgeon and the only woman ever awarded the Medal of Honor. Catherine Wright, the sister of the Wright brothers and without whom that famous flight may not have taken place. And Frances Perkins, the first woman to serve in a presidential cabinet and a key architect of many New Deal programs. By sharing these and many other stories, the authors demonstrate that women were active participants in the major events that shaped American history, not merely observers on the sidelines. I hope that this book will not only inspire and inform readers as it did me, but also encourage them to reflect on whose stories have been included or left out of our national narrative and how we might address that going forward. For KPCW, I'm Sue Niblock.